Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and this is part two with Josh Epley. Today, we're going to talk about how he spends his time after retiring. And Josh, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate being here again.
Yeah, so you have a very awesome Mile High Five t-shirt. I appreciate you wearing that. When did you acquire that? We've met a couple of times. I can't remember when you got it.
Yeah, I actually got this from Carl.
All right.
Yeah, he had a few at Economy a couple of years ago. I don't remember which year it was. And I tracked him down and begged for one. And yeah, my wife and I both have one.
Very nice. Okay, cool. So if people missed the first part, we talked all about your journey getting to FI. And as a quick reminder, when did you retire?
April 11th was my last day, April of 2025.
Okay, so you have about 6 months in, if I'm doing my my math correctly. A lot of people, this is a surprising thing that I run into. Everyone's different, but because I didn't like my corporate job, I was kind of hoping to get away from it. Even my self-employed situation that I created, I also wanted to stop doing that. I like wanted to quiet quit. And I'm self-employed. It's crazy. But I have a lot of hobbies. There's a lot of stuff that I want to do. And even now that I'm doing less than I ever did as far as a pure work and productivity standpoint, I still have very full days. And I feel like, oh, I want to spend even more time on my hobbies. And I don't understand when people say, maybe would stop working, but I don't know what I would do. Or maybe Elizabeth, you know, she lets people know that she left her 9-to-5 job, her W-2, and they're like, well, that must be nice, but I don't even know what I would spend my time on. And I think, oh, even just home projects take a long time, and we have a relatively new home. So anyway, I'm always puzzled by this. And I'm curious, Josh, did you have any reservations? Were you nervous about stopping your W-2 and then having infinite free time?
Yeah, we had a lot, my wife and I, Lori, we had a lot of conversations around this topic because over the years, I had all these ideas and dreams of how I was going to spend my time when I didn't no longer had to work for 9 hours and commute an hour back and forth. And we had a lot of conversations about what I could be doing and the things that I would enjoy spending my time on. But then as I got closer during that last couple of months of working, I started to have those feelings of doubt. Like, will I have enough things to keep me busy? And then people started asking me, and I felt like I didn't have a real good answer. Like, I could rattle off a lot of things, but in my own mind, I was kind of second guessing whether or not, is this actually going to be something that's sustainable? Or am I going to knock all this stuff out in a matter of weeks and then suddenly be bored? But it's only been 5 months or so, but it's been, I actually am struggling with the balance of putting too much on my plate and not having enough free time or downtime. And it sort of ebbs and flows a little bit, but I have to continuously like take a step back and evaluate a little bit and think, does this feel right? Is this what I expected it to be? Because at times it's stressful. There's, you know, like you said, you're trying to do all these things, and I have a lot of hobbies and interests, and I'm trying to lean into them. And then I have I'm guilty of saying yes to a lot of things. So then I have to take a step back and say, no, I can't do this, or these are like the big items that I need to focus on. So yeah, I think it hasn't turned out that way. I'm never bored. Definitely never bored, but I almost swing the other way where I'm trying to put too much on my plate and getting overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because former co-host Carl Jensen of this podcast, he's still very busy, and he's like tried to get some things off of his plate over time, and he's doing much better. I saw him at the gym the other day. Yeah. He still has a very busy schedule, but it's on a little bit different stuff, which is good. So we could all learn lessons from Carl.
Absolutely.
That said, one thing we'll do in this episode is I think it should be more conversational. So we'll kind of go back and forth, and I'll ask you some questions, Josh, and you'll hopefully ask me stuff, or I'll interject and give unsolicited advice, which is really what podcasting is all about, right? I mean, especially if I do an individual episode, it's just me talking at people. No, I'm just kidding. But hopefully it'll be more conversational. I have at least a few years of experience and sort of experience not working and having to come up with my own structure. And it's been an ongoing sort of journey, and there's a feedback loop, and my interests change and external factors change, and you know, other relationships that I have shift. So it's kind of like you always have to be willing to make those changes. And I think, you know, overall, like I think I've personally adapted pretty well, where I'm like, oh, I want to try to spend a little more time on this, or this didn't work out like I thought, and it's actually a negative overall, like net negative. So maybe I need to do a little bit less of that thing. So we'll treat it that way. Now, you mentioned leading up to actually leaving your W-2, you got in your head a little bit, you started thinking about it, people were feeding that and asking questions. So what did you, like, well, how did you approach the first couple months? Did you take any specific prep? Like, hey, I want to make sure the structure of my week or days look like a certain thing.
Yeah, I think I got a little bit too heavy on the scheduling at first. So I knew the very first day what I wanted to do was, it was going to be a Monday. I wanted to take a long bike ride. And I went out to this trail, spent several hours riding around, and it was a beautiful April spring day. And then I was done. It was like 10 miles or something like that. And by the time I was finished, it was like 11 in the morning still. And I'm like, what the hell do I do with the rest of my day? It felt so, I know I'll remember that day for a very long time, because it just stuck with me as feeling so odd that I was out there and there was almost nobody around. And then I had the rest of the day to myself. And so I came home and I sat here for a minute and I had some lunch, and I thought, I got to do something else. I can't just waste this time. This is my first official retirement day. So I got out in the yard and I was doing some yard work, and then did that for 3 to 4 hours. And then it was time to make dinner, and my wife was coming home from work, and that's kind of how I spent that day. And then it just kind of like carried on from there. Then I started saying, okay, well, tomorrow I'm going to do this yard work, and then that's going to carry on. And I thought that is what I needed to do. And I didn't want to be in a situation where I was letting the day come to me. I wanted to make sure that I was being intentional and trying to be as productive as I possibly could. Even though I had heard all the conversations between you and Carl and Carl's advice, I was like, no, this is going to work for me. I'm going to have to do it this way because I needed to be productive and efficient with my time. And I didn't want to let people down. I wanted people to know that I was spending my time in a productive way. I wasn't just wasting my available time. So I think there's a little bit of that outside influence as well, as kind of a little bit of what are other people going to think about when they ask me, hey, what'd you do? What are you doing now that you're retired? I want to be able to have like concrete answers. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to have at the time anyway. How about you? Like, what did those early days look like for you whenever you, I think your circumstances were a little different, but when you left, how did your first couple of weeks look?
So I'll jump in. Like in 2015, I got laid off, but I'm going to backtrack a little bit as well. So in 2015, I got laid off, and we had just moved to Bozeman, Montana from Atlanta after a long road trip. It was kind of technically, I never liked the digital nomad term, but I mean, basically for like 3 months, digital nomads traveling in Montana, and we settled down in Bozeman. At the time, like we were in accumulation phase. We weren't thinking, hey, we're going to retire soon. We didn't have a date in mind. I was just like, okay, I need to earn some money. So, and by the way, like we had only just calculated our net worth in 2014 or so, like the first part of 2014. So we were like very early in the journey, and I was like, oh shit, I need to earn some money. So basically I worked a lot. I had my side businesses going on, and like many people where you get laid off and you have a handful of projects, I made the mistake of trying to work on all of them at the same time, which, you know, you spread yourself too thin, and there's some logic where you could see which one has traction and then move towards that, which is kind of what I did. And because of that, when I first lost my job and got laid off, I was pretty busy, but I was working on my own stuff. And as far as like the structure of the day, I basically kept the same sort of work structure where walk the dog, maybe I would go to the gym early in the morning and work out, and then work for a few hours. My brain works best before like 2 p.m. or so, something like that. Probably a lot of caffeine involvement in there, but work best during that time frame. And like, I worked hard. Like, I worked a lot of hours for probably like 5 years or so. The reason why I want to jump back is because I was in the management consulting world. There's projects. Basically, it's a project-based situation. Sometimes they last, you know, 6 weeks or 6 months or a few years, depending on what you're working on. And if you're not specifically on a project, you're called on the bench, is how people refer to it as. And basically, you could work on some business development or like some internal projects and stuff like that. Or sometimes you don't end up working on anything and you're just kind of like doing training. And even in, you know, 2006, or when I moved to a new company in 2007, I was on the bench for a while, which is not a great place to be. I mean, the economy was rocky and all that kind of stuff. You're kind of subject to layoffs if you're like essentially dead weight and you cost the company money. But for whatever reason, I was totally okay with it. So when I was on the bench, I was like, this is great. I'm getting paid and I'm staying home. I'm not even commuting and going to the office or anything like that. And I would work on home projects and I was totally content with it. And I had no issue with not being productive, even while I was being paid pretty well at a company. So I just have that loose screw in my head where I was like, this is fine. They make me travel other times and that's pretty tough. So I have this time at home, so I'm gonna take it. So when it came around to doing less, it's within me to just not visibly be productive looking to other people. I really didn't care that much. So
going back to the spot whenever you were laid off and you mentioned that you felt the pull or the need to make some money. Did you have a dollar amount in mind? Were you trying to hit a certain amount? I assume it probably wasn't what your salary was, but was there something that you were really trying to strive for a specific reason?
So it's been long enough. I made about 100K in those days. And I was hoping to at least match that. I knew it would take a little bit of time, but I was actually hoping that I would make a lot more money, because when you work at a company, you know, you're capped at like whatever your boss is earning, like you're not going to earn more than that. And I was like, it's not that much more. So I was hoping that I could earn more. And if you're working for yourself, especially like online, there's no cap. Like, it scales in a way that's not intuitive. And that is what happened. So like, it took a little while to get off the ground, but within a year I was doing awesome. So like, I had it in my mind and I was like, oh, I'm interested in trying to do as much as I can and be productive. And then I realized, like, you know what, like, this is a good spot if I could coast here for a little while. So
yeah, and that's interesting. So and the reason why I ask the question is because my wife and I, during some of those conversations, we had a lot of conversations about what will this look like for our home dynamics. And we talked about, should I take over some of her chores? And because we have very specific things that we do. Like, she does all the grocery shopping. She does the majority of the meal planning. I make dinner for us most nights, but she pays all the bills, like the day-to-day stuff. And so I was trying to pull some of that back from her. And she was like, no, I want to keep those jobs. And so then I kept asking, well, what would you like to see from me? And maybe that wasn't the right question at the time, but one of the things that we finally settled on was, from a financial perspective, she wanted a little bit of peace of mind that if we were planning to have all this fun and extra travel and things like that, she wanted me to earn a little bit of money, like fun money. And we settled on $1,000 a month. And at the time I was like, oh yeah, sure. No problem. I can make $1,000 a month. It's pretty insignificant. I'm going to do all these things. And I have side hustles that I have been successful with in the past. So I'll just continue those. I'll lean into those more and I'll be able to make that money. And I'm 5 months in, Doug, and I haven't really made a dollar. It hasn't caused any friction in our relationship or anything like that. But it's something that's on the back of my mind, is like, I'm kind of letting her down a little bit that I haven't achieved that yet. And she hasn't even said a word about it, but yeah, that's okay. And we don't need to do that, but it's like one of those things is, I think it's just kind of going back to the, maybe a little bit of my origin story. We had a lot of financial challenges. So just to have like additional peace of mind, she'd like to have a little bit of extra cushion.
Oh, you know, and it's not too dissimilar from us. So, I mean, my business was making money, and for the people that don't know, I had like affiliate sites and online courses, but the market, and I mean, it's changed dramatically in the last 3 years. So I essentially retired all that stuff. But when Elizabeth and I were talking about her leaving her W-2, I was thinking, oh, I will most likely continue to make like 100K a year, like on this stuff in, you know, 2 hours a week or some pretty small amount that I was putting in. And that totally changed. And I, you know, she was counting on that, to your point. And also, like, our plan, our long-term plan does not require it. So fortunately, like with our advisor, Steve, we're able to, like, we're all confident in the plan. And now I have stepped back in the last couple years, like I've turned down the revenue. Like I said, I retired courses and other stuff like that. So I felt the pressure for a little while. And, you know, we lost our sponsor for Mile High Fi. So I'm like trying to figure out, like, I need to get something out of it. And great conversations like this are part of it. But also, you know, to run a business, and even if it's making just whatever, $50 a month or hardly any, you got to file taxes or software. There's other stuff. Like, the overhead is thing. People don't think about it. So when I get comments on YouTube where they're like, it's so cheap, like, why are you trying to earn money at this? I'm like, man, it costs like a couple thousand dollars to just like run something that earns no money. Like, and I don't expect everyone to understand that. I don't expect people to be like, oh yeah, I feel bad for you. But anyway, the point is the pressure makes sense, because like it does give you peace of mind, even if your plan doesn't require it. It's like, well, I want to get the guacamole at Chipotle or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. That's the kind of thing that we're going up to Montana later this month and spending a week right outside of Glacier. And it's going to be a pretty expensive trip. And we, even though we do a fair bit of travel hacking and flights are covered and we still have, you know, a lot of expenses. So so our traveling expense has grown over the last couple of years intentionally, but it's kind of a bit unpredictable because we don't necessarily want to budget and hold a very strict amount of money that we're going to spend on that trip. We want to have fun and do whatever might come our way. So that might mean that it's going to cost us $3,000, $4,000. And that's kind of a big line item in a month. So if there's opportunity to offset that, it's just, like I said earlier, peace of mind for her, that we're not drawing that directly out of our savings account with no plan to put it back in at some point. So that's kind of one of the things that I'm working through. And again, it's not, if you look at our net worth and you look at some of our other income, it's not critical or mandatory by any means, but it's still one of the things that we're maybe struggling with. And it's early in the early retirement journey. We're again, just like 5 months into it. So
back on track. You you stopped working. We're only at day one. So you stop working, or week one, and then you go on a bike ride. It didn't take you as long as you thought. And the cool part, like my observation is just like doing one thing per day is really awesome. And then like a great way to follow that up is like a nice lunch and then a nap. And that visibly looks unproductive on the outside. And one of the cool things that I guess I have some pride in, or it could be verging on like a negative emotion where I'm like, I'm not sure what's a little past pride where I'm like, I'm not thinking I'm better than people, but maybe that's it. I don't know. Yeah. Ego. And I'm like, I have time to like make a lunch or I have time to take a nap or whatever. And that's really like luxurious because if you have time and you don't have to be in a rush, like that's what I really value. And you're like, ah, you know what? I should do something else. And the cool thing is you could always go out, do some yard work or clean up around the house or something like lightly productive that you just actually have time for. So I think it's totally fine to just do like one thing. So I do want to go back to like how you structure your weeks or months or something like that. Because you have various things you want to spend time on. And if you don't watch it, we know that we can end up spending too much time on like one given project and then other things fall. So without the, you know, the structure of a job, like how did you figure out what to work on a weekly or monthly or quarterly basis?
Yeah. So before I pulled the trigger and left the job, we sat down and created a list of all the things that we needed to do for our home, which our house isn't very old either. It's like 20 years old, but it still needs some updating here and there, maybe some deferred maintenance in some certain areas. And then we have a handful of rental properties. So we made a list of like, these are all the things that I need to do over a period of time. Again, deferred maintenance, nothing that's an emergency, but things that need to be done just to kind of keep up with the properties. And I handle all that on my own. So we don't have a property manager. I don't have a handyman. I do all that myself. So we made that list and that felt good. It looked like we had a good list of things that needed to be done. And I could kind of check them off one at a time. But kind of maybe back to your point there about that you mentioned earlier, where you tried to take the approach where you looked at maybe five different things and tried to fit them all in. I think I've made that mistake where I have said, okay, I have these five projects that I want to tackle. And I did try to go, okay, Monday, I'm going to spend my time on this one. And then Tuesday, something completely different. Meanwhile, I didn't have Monday's project complete. So I was coming back to it the following week. It was still on my to-do list because I wasn't able to check the box and complete it. So this has gone on. And that's kind of the experiment that I've ran for the last several months. And it's only recently dawned on me that that approach is probably not appropriate. It's probably just mentally taxing because I'm constantly worrying about that one not being complete. So I need to, and I thought I was doing myself a favor because I wanted my weeks to have a lot of variety. I didn't want to be in a situation where I felt like it was a struggle to just keep working on the same thing for 5 days or 10 days or whatever it might be. And it turns out, though, I think that, and I'm just starting the experiment with trying to maintain focus on one thing at a time, but I think that that's going to be, for me, a better approach. So I made that list, and then we started putting some level of priority to those projects. So this is what we need, what we want to tackle first, and this is the second thing, the third thing, you know, so on and so forth. So we, just like kind of in my corporate job, like these are all the goals and objectives that I have for the year. And these are all the metrics that are going to support those objectives. It started to feel a little bit like that.
Yeah, it makes me think of the, you know, I have a project management background. It makes me think of, you know, completing projects and just working on the one. And it depends on what you're working on, like whether you're like, oh, it's important for this to finish up. Versus like the variety of a week and like working on parallel projects where, I mean, to the extreme, let's say you have houses, right? Which you do. And you're like, I want to redo the tile in each of the bathrooms at each one of the houses. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to batch this job. So I'm going to work on just getting the tile down in each spot before grouting it. So you end up with a bunch of partially finished things, which I think this is what contractors do. And this is why it takes so long to get stuff done, right? It's like, they're like, oh yeah, we'll be right back tomorrow. And they're like, actually, I got some other, you know, they got a higher paying job. But anyway, if you're working on stuff in parallel, then like it takes forever to finish like the one thing, even though it's only whatever, 3 days of work, but you spread it out over 30 days. So it takes forever to do this stuff. But it's interesting. And it's a great example where you tried to do something. You thought, hey, I would love to have some variety in the week. And I don't want to do the same thing every day. But it turns out it might be good to do the same things, depending on what it is, to like finish the tile in that one house first before you move on to the next one or whatever. So how long did it take you to figure this out?
I think the first couple of months was just experimenting and just kind of still in that honeymoon phase of like, this is great. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, but I was still putting pressure on myself. By month 3 or 4 was when I started to kind of feel maybe a little bit of overwhelm or burnout, that I was juggling too many things and maybe saying yes to too many things, and then feeling like I was letting people down if I wasn't able to get to whatever they asked me to help with. And so it's really been only recently that I've come to realize, and I'm a big fan of Cal Newport. I'm not sure if you are familiar with him, but I've read his book, Slow Productivity, and it just didn't fully sink in to me that he, like the second point in his book is do fewer things. And so over the last month or so, again, conversations with my wife, I'm like, this is what I'm feeling. I don't really like it. I think I need to go in this direction. And she's like, yeah, whatever, give it a shot. And so that's where I'm trying. So like, I just for an example, I have, we talked last time, I have one of my rental properties was, I knew that the lease was ending and the tenant was going to be leaving. And that happened at the end of last month. And now we're in a process where we have to turn it over, find a new tenant, get it cleaned up, do some minor repairs. So rather than try to sprinkle that in among other things, I've decided that's going to be my primary focus. And so far, it seems like mentally, it feels a little bit better that I know that this is my number one priority. I'm going to get to these, all this other stuff is going to be set aside until I complete that task of getting somebody in, and that might take the next few weeks, and that's okay.
Yeah. I do like Cal Newport a lot. He has a lot of books out there, but Deep Work was one that I really enjoyed. And I actually got Slow Productivity, but I haven't gotten around to reading it. I'm doing fewer things. So yeah. Reading was one of those things. I have been listening to his podcast quite a bit recently. And yeah, he has great content overall. And there were a couple, one of the ideas that he mentioned not too long ago, which may come into play, and it's, you know, maybe how you and I are sort of intuitively adjusting like what we're working on, but I'll summarize it quickly and I'll probably come back to it maybe for a full episode sometime, but essentially where you're observing your day and how you feel, and you realize, or maybe your weeks, and you're thinking, oh, I actually don't want to work on different stuff each day. Not always. Sometimes you want to have that. And then you're making an adjustment based on like a feedback loop where you're like, oh, I thought this would be good, because we don't know, right? Especially when you first stop working, you try something out, it works or it doesn't work, or maybe you need to adjust it or whatever. But instead of, you know, some people are like, I really want to travel. And then they hit the road and then they realize actually they don't want to travel. And they're like, oh, I guess I better go back to work. And I don't think that's necessarily the right move for everyone. I would encourage most people to not go back to work and like try something else. But like, if you think, hey, I'm going to move into a van and drive around, that might not turn out how you think. Like, there's pros and cons to any sort of, you know, big adjustment or lifestyle change or whatever. And some people may love it, and some people might not. And you don't know until you give it a shot. So any thoughts on that and like the adjustment or how someone might be able to approach it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a journey, and there's always going to be some opportunity for you to try different things. And don't be so rigid that you think that it's an all or nothing proposition, that if it doesn't turn out exactly, or it doesn't feel exactly like you expected it to, that now it's time to go, like you said, go back to work is probably not the, for me, I never have considered that whatsoever. I get people asking me that all the time. I just had somebody asking me that last night, when are you coming back to work? I do not miss that one bit, even though I might have some overwhelm because of some of these other things that I have going on. But I think that, yeah, there's definitely going to be different times where I'm going to have to pivot and try something new. And I think anybody should try that before they give up and think that, yeah, I got to go find a job. That's so foreign to me. In fact, a real quick story, there was a guy I heard yesterday at our local meetup who had, in conversation, he had said, I'm three years away from leaving work, but I don't know what I'm going to do with my time. And I wanted to catch him afterwards and just kind of talk through some of this stuff of what I've experienced in the last several months. But my heart goes out to them, because I just can't even imagine being in that situation where you really don't know what you're going to do with your time if you have more available to you.
Carl always mentioned that he would ask people what they do on their weekends. So is that a good thought? Like, if I asked you before you stopped working, like, hey, what do you do on your weekends? Did that just expand out and give you, or how did it work out for you? Is that a good approach?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. So I had a lot of hobbies and some side hustles. So I do some woodworking and build some furniture. I dabble in YouTube. I like to hike and bike, recreational type stuff. And I was trying to force all of that activity into 2.5 days or so each week. And now I feel like that is definitely expanded across almost 7 days, really, which is, I got to be careful with.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's shift a little bit and talk about like what you are spending, you know, the time on, especially new things that you were able to add in. And you actually sent over a list of things, which I think was kind of a brainstorming list, you know, refined a little bit. I'm sure you threw some stuff out, but there's more stuff on here from what I see than really like what we could all spend time on. And it's like, you know, the normal stuff, and I'll summarize a couple things. So it's like real estate management. You talked about home projects. You mentioned, you know, YouTube and other stuff, but it's like travel or health and wellness. It's like you could essentially spend all your time on health and wellness and travel. And then, there's other things we have to do, the normal admin of running a household and real estate management business and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm curious, like what was one of the things you were most excited to get going and spend more time on?
Yeah, I'd say one of the things that totally came out of the blue that I did not plan whatsoever was running. I've never been a runner. I've tried it in the past and just, it didn't feel great. And I felt like I just couldn't. And I guess there's been some opportunity for experiment with a little bit more free time. And my nephew was starting cross country and he was going to run a local 5K. And it just, for whatever reason, it just spoke to me in the moment. I was like, this sounds really cool. And I would like to be in shape so that I could run a 5K, 3.1 miles. And so I signed up for it. And it was like, I thought I had an 8-week runway. So I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to plan out. I'm going to do like a couch to 5K over 8 weeks. And then my math sucked and I realized I only had 4 weeks. And so I condensed it in. And I'm not kidding, Doug. I started with doing 1 minute intervals. So 1 minute of run, 1 minute of walk. And I took it extremely slow. And I only ran every other day for a while. I did not try to push multiple days in a row of running. And I just slowly built up a little bit over time. And I'm proud to say I was able, my two goals were to complete the 5K in under 30 minutes and to not stop at any point. And the course that I ended up running on was hillier than I expected it to be. And a couple times I wanted to stop, but I just kept going. So I'm proud to say I accomplished both goals. I did finish in under 30 minutes. I did not stop one time. And I can't believe it. I'm surprised that I at 48 years old, finally ran my first 5K. So that's awesome. That's a really cool one.
Congrats. Yeah. Like, was it just the motivation that, you know, like that you were going to do the 5K where you're like, you know what? I made a commitment. I'm going to give it a shot and that sort of thing. Like, what got you to enjoy running? Pure stubbornness?
Yeah, it took me a while to actually enjoy it. I would say it wasn't until like week three or four, whenever I was able to go for longer distances and longer times. I was starting to run for like 15 or 20 minutes without needing to take a break. And then I started to feel more proud of myself. Like, I built up some endurance. I was working on my breath work and trying to watch YouTube and learn better techniques, which I never even knew there was like techniques to running. I just thought you just move your legs fast. I think just it was a little bit of willpower that I really wanted to. I had a goal in mind. I'm very goal oriented, so I always like to have something that I'm striving for. Financial independence was one of those, of course. And now I do feel like there are certain things that I'm drawn to, that as long as I have a goal, like if I would have just set out to say, I'm going to run and I'm going to run every day and I'm going to get better at it, I probably would have failed early on because I didn't have a goal in mind. And my goal, even though it was in a short time frame, a month away, I knew that that was where I needed to be. I wanted to reach this goal. I didn't want to embarrass myself, and I wanted to finish in under 30 minutes and not stop. So that was like the willpower that kept me going.
Very cool. I ran quite a bit in, I guess, like 20s and early 30s or so. Eventually, I ended up with like issues with my Achilles and blah, blah, blah. About, I can't remember, 4 years ago, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to stop running. I'm going to do some other stuff instead. Really miss it. Like, I enjoyed running, I don't know, between maybe like an hour, give or take, you know, 15 minutes or something like that. So sort of like longer middle distance. I'm not very fast, but you know, it's not like you're me or trying to win the race, right? Like, we're just trying to, I mean, honestly, at some point I was just like, as long as I don't get injured, I'm very happy with this situation. And it's been a few years and I've actually had I haven't gone for a run, but I'm like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that I could run a little bit. And I've kept my cardio up. I typically do the stair climber at the gym, sometimes with a weighted vest. So my cardio is like probably the same as it was a few years ago, roughly. But yeah, the injury aspect where I'm like, I would run and then my Achilles would be swollen for, you know, a long several weeks or something like that. So it's actually finally like it took a long time. I did not think it was going to go down deep in the weeds. A few runners know what I'm talking about, but yeah, it's tough. I'm glad you're getting into it and, you know, don't get injured. Don't go too fast.
Yeah, I got that. I got a lot of advice from people that, and as I told them the training routine that I set up for myself, I got a lot of good feedback that you're taking it slow and you're taking the right approach, but I am expecting to stick with it. I signed up for another 5K for later this month. I haven't been running as much, so I've kind of slowed down a little bit on the number of times that I'm running, and I'm planning to ramp back up. But I am very cautious about getting injured, because even though I feel great, then the other day my knee just kind of like locked up on me. It felt like a sharp pain, and I'm like, okay, I need to listen to this, so don't push it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like when you feel really good, you run harder and faster. And like, you know, on the long run days or whatever plan you have, like go slow on those days. You're supposed to go slow on the long days. So do you have any goals for a 10K or a half marathon or trail running or anything like that? I think I may go to trail running because it's easier on the joints and that sort of thing. But yeah, any future stuff?
I have thought about that. Yeah, the next race is a 5K also, but it's a trail run. And they have a 10 mile on it as well that I thought about for a moment, because I've gotten up to about 6.5 miles. This is my longest run now. And I gave it just a half of a thought, but I'm like, no, I don't want to jump too soon and get too carried away.
Yeah.
But it is something that it's in the back of my mind to perhaps eventually get to like a half marathon.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
The cool part with the trail runs, very common to just walk, or I mean, it's a brisk hike or whatever, but usually it's hillier. And in your area, I mean, there's hills all around there, right? I mean, like it's a hilly course most likely. So there's no issue if you're like, yeah, I'm going to walk a quarter mile every mile, or you hit the hill and you're like, you know what, I'm just going to walk up, I'm going to hike quickly up the hill and people could pass you or whatever. So yeah, it's a lot. Maybe people's competitiveness like goes down a little bit because like you see other people walking and you're like, okay, this is okay to do. A lot of people are walking up this hill. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't do too much. Don't go too fast. Yeah. What else have you been spending time on?
So my buddy Elliot and I started a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think we talked about it in the first episode briefly, and we're calling it 9 to 5. And we've got about 5 episodes under our belt and a couple more recorded. So those are released now. We've gotten some really good feedback. There was a couple of them. Well, our very first one, it was a little bit clunky. So we're definitely learning still. And we've learned that we should not be trying to do any kind of scripting. We really just need to have a conversation like you and I are having now.
Yeah.
People caught on to that pretty quickly. They were like, oh, is this what you guys are going to do? This is not good.
Was that like the first episode? You guys kind of mapped it out too much or something?
We did. We were trying to do like just a 2-minute, 3-minute intro.
Oh.
And we read from the screen like way too much, read from the script, and it shows. So we want to leave it out there, but we'd like to re-record it and just have a little bit more open dialogue of like who we are, what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast and our goals and things like that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I talked to Elliot, which I think his episode is coming out soon. It's like a St. Louis takeover, like Kristen's on all the time. You and Elliot are on, but you can re-record it. It's kind of crazy, but you can develop the skill of reading so that it sounds like your natural inflection, which over time, and I've done YouTube and other stuff for several years, but it's kind of weird that you can make it sound, I mean, obviously like newscasters and stuff like that are able to do it. Not that I have that level of skill or anything like that, but it's interesting that you can make it sound like it's more natural than it really is. So a lot of podcasters do that. In fact, I just read that whole thing just now.
Great job.
What's the biggest surprise with starting the podcast? I know it's very early on, but any big surprises?
I think just the amount of feedback that we've received so far. We had our local meetup last night and people were coming in and coming up to us and they were saying that they've checked it out and that they really appreciated our stories, because we started episodes 2 and 3 were our origin stories. So mine was very similar to my conversation with you. Maybe not so much into the details of like net worth and those kinds of things, but it was just talking through the adversity that I had experienced. And several people, even though I've given the presentation in our local group, they were either newer to the group or didn't remember all the details. So I've gotten a lot of really good feedback on that, and Elliot's story as well. And they just appreciate that we're, you know, having that like kind of open conversations with each other without getting in too much into the mechanics of what FIRE is all about, or the, you know, the details of 4% rule. We're trying to stay away from that kind of stuff. It's more like lifestyle and just bouncing ideas off of each other.
There are so many podcasts out there. Obviously people are either watching or listening to this, and so many of us like really got attracted to FI because of podcasts. And I think some people would wonder, like, you know, maybe they want to start a podcast, because we all kind of came up that way, right? Or many of us did. And they're like, ah, there's so many shows out there. I don't think people want to hear from me, or like this stuff has already been covered. So why do you think you're show should be out there, or like what do you bring to the table? And you could put this in the format of like encouraging people to share their story out there. And I mean, that's kind of the idea, but yeah, why are you guys starting a show?
I think for anybody, it's an opportunity to just provide your perspective that's going to be different from others. So even though, and no two stories are going to be the same, but even though you might come from a similar background, you're going to make different decisions and have different choices and have different life experiences that are going to set your life course in a different way. And I think for me, it's always been beneficial to hear stories and to get information from people like yourself and Carl, that I want to be able to provide that as well. So my story is obviously different than your guys's. My story is different than Elliot's. And hopefully I can provide some level of inspiration. I actually had a guy last night who said that he has had several people come up to him and say that fire is not for me because I've had all these life circumstances where I'm coming from a very bad situation. I don't make a lot of money. I have kids, you know, whatever, all these excuses. And he's like, your story is very much something that those types of people need to hear, that it is very achievable. It's still, no matter what background you're coming from. So that's kind of what I think we are looking to provide to people, is how can we possibly make better choices, to think through some of the decisions in life, and ultimately maybe not retire early, but gain some level of financial independence.
Yeah, well said. I think, you know, one other aspect too is the community. Like you mentioned, you know, you're active in your Choosify group. You go to Camp Fives, you go to Economy. There's like different pockets of, you know, the community all out there. There's so many shows out there. I don't know how many dozens of, you know, FI related podcasts and lifestyle related podcasts, but like, you know, I typically go to the Camp Fi in Colorado because it's closer, and I'm sure most people around the country do the same. A lot of people do travel around, but the point being, there's like all these different pockets of the community, and like we're all linked together a little bit. But at the same time, like if you're able to like share your story via podcast, where honestly, even if only a couple dozen people, like people you personally know, listen to it, it's pretty cool. And they may tell a couple other folks. And I mean, chances are, like if you're producing something interesting that's entertaining / informative, like more people will listen to it than you think. And, you know, the download numbers might be smaller than you expect or bigger than you expect. I mean, everyone has different expectations, but if you're just like, oh, I'm trying to like communicate and share the story and like have good conversations, that sort of thing, like there's no reason not to give it a shot. As I mentioned, there is some overhead, but like you can keep expenses pretty low. Are you able to share like how much it costs for you guys to get started? If you know it off the top of your head, or roughly.
Yeah, roughly, not too expensive. I think the microphones that we're using were about $100 and maybe $30 for the stand, headphones, another like $70 or so. So maybe all in for equipment, we were at around $200, and we're just using our laptop. So right now we're remote from each other, and we use Descript, which I think we went ahead and purchased the annual subscription of it, which was a little bit pricier. I think it came in around like $280 or something like that. And that was, maybe we jumped into the deep end there, because now we are committed, or we should be committed anyway, to getting the most out of that software for the next year. And there was a couple other like hosting fees that were pretty minimal, I think, maybe another $30 here and there. So all in for the both of us, maybe $500 total with equipment and subscriptions and things like that. But you know, this equipment we're going to have for a long time, so we shouldn't have to upgrade that anytime soon. The subscriptions are one-time fee for right now, and then we'll have to renew in a year. So we'll evaluate and see if we want to keep this thing going or not.
Right. Yeah. And I think people technically could do it for a little cheaper. Like you are, like I've mentioned, like software and hosting, it's like there are some freer options, but there's always a trade-off, or not freer, there's inexpensive / free options. And then there's always a trade-off. Like I think you can get podcast hosting for free. However, like it's on someone else's platform, which, who know, like, basically at some point, if there's not ads, like, they're going to put ads on there, right? Like, there's no free ride. So, like, paying a little bit for the hosting is usually worthwhile. But anyway, that's deep into the details. So overall, relatively inexpensive. And one other thing, in the notes you sent over, you have another podcast. I didn't know about this. What's the story with that one?
Yeah, so my longtime buddy Greg and I, we grew up together and we've been friends forever. We started a podcast probably back in like 2016 that we called Stuck in Beta. And the name came from, we just were like throwing stuff against the wall, using a lot of free software and things like that. We always recorded live. We used to use Facebook and then YouTube for a while. But it's more of a variety show. It's not FI related. It's not money related by any means. We do a couple different segments. We usually have a beer together, and we try to find something new that we've never had before. And we do like what we call a review. We're not beer experts like you by any means, Doug. We just, it smells good. It tastes good. It looks good. Talk about, you know, any interesting characteristics that we find online about it. We usually try to find a new snack. We'll talk about what we're watching, pop culture, that sort of thing. It's just kind of an excuse for us to get together and hang out. We record in his basement and we have a good time with it. So we went on hiatus back in COVID, actually, because social distancing, we really couldn't enjoy a beer together and snacks. So, and then life got a little more complicated. He had a couple of kids, and finally I've gotten back to it though. And I kind of pushed it along. Another one of those things where I'm like, hey, I have a lot more free time, but even though he's still working, he's able to find the time to do it. And we've been at it for about 5 or 6 weeks now, and we're having a lot of fun with it. So those, we can leave a link to those as well if anybody would be interested. But we also do a YouTube version of it so that we have that available as well.
That's pretty fun. It's just an excuse to like get together and talk and catch up, which totally makes sense. Yeah, that's very cool. So we covered a lot of stuff. Anything else you're spending your time on before we hit sort of the wrap up and maybe kind of talk about the future?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So what have you learned so far?
The biggest takeaway is that change is inevitable. I mean, life will throw curveballs your way and there'll be new interests that'll come along. And I think it's just important to be able to pivot. And even though I come from a planning background and I like to have things kind of set in some form of a plan that I can adhere to. I mentioned Cal Newport earlier. I like to use his time block planner, but things just happen and interests change as well. So I think it's very important to be just agile and always be ready for change. And then I think other people count on me. So I always have to be careful of that, whether it's my wife, my kids, my family, my friends. And now that I have more free time, I want to make sure that I am being helpful. And I have a tendency to be a little bit selfish at times. Like, I want to do all these things for me, but I know I need to help support other people as well. So this is a big one, and one that I'm actually interested to get your feedback on, is that I find that I still have to schedule my recreational activities. I thought that after I no longer had a W-2 job that I would just, like, the weather's nice, I'm going to go for a bike ride today. I'm going to go for a hike today. And unfortunately, I tend to schedule my week out. And then I realize I don't leave any room for that. Or maybe I'll think, I'll take a bike ride that afternoon, that, you know, Thursday afternoon. And of course, then the weather, it'll be 100 degrees or something like that. So I'm actually curious. I found that I've had to do that more. And maybe even leave a little more time in my schedule for those things. But how do you handle those kinds of things?
I think, obviously, like, some people want to schedule more. Totally cool. And I like the time blocking idea. Cal Newport covers it in Deep Work, I think, and probably other places extensively. But if you need to schedule the time to make sure that your other things don't seep into it and that you actually have like time allotted, do that, whatever you got to do to make sure that you're doing your leisure activities. I think those are really important. The way I do it, most of my time is set aside for leisure activities now. So I only schedule like, you know, like this call, or when I look at my week now, it's like prep call with Monica, which she'll be on the show soon. But I talked to her yesterday and I'm going to interview her in a couple of days. So it's just like, I just have like little pockets of productivity in there and everything else is open. So this is tough to do, but when you're scheduling things out, like you're doing the time block method, right? So you're filling in the blocks. So you're filling it in. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it as like negative space, and it's really good to have the open space. And I think you've seen this in your whole life, man, right? Your whole life, shit pops up. Some fucking thing goes wrong. You didn't count on it. Get a flat tire, some other thing. Again, someone in your family needs some help. There's always something that pops up that you didn't plan for, pretty much guaranteed. So if you fill your schedule up, then you're going to be behind, basically. So you need to have, and Cal actually covers this, like we're pretty bad at estimating how much time something is going to take. We're like, oh, this is going to take an hour. Guess what? It takes like 3.5 hours. So, because things didn't go like you planned, or you get distracted or something else happens. So if you have like big chunks of open space, when things go wrong, then you could take care of it. It's no problem. And you have to do this anyway, where if you get a flat tire, you will fix that. That's like a high priority thing and you have no choice but to fix that. Everything else gets pushed away. And I'm in a lucky spot. So basically it's mostly open space all the time. In my head, mentally, I have some structure. I'll chat with Elizabeth like, hey, I think I'm gonna go to the gym for a couple few hours today. Or like she's going to the movies. She's going like over lunch or something like that with a friend. So she'll be gone for a few hours. She'll have the car. So I'm like, oh, I'll go to the gym. I'll walk the dog, stuff like that. So the overall point is just leave a lot more time, and it may make you uncomfortable. Does it make you nervous to have like open space? You're like, oh, there's 2 hours unallotted in your time block?
And not necessarily. I appreciate having that space available, but I think that going back to my struggle with probably saying yes to too many things, or just, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that I've learned going back to your question is that people will come to me and ask for things. So I mentioned that I do woodworking. I have people say, hey, can you build this for me? Can you build that for me? And I'm like, sure. I don't really give a timeline, but it's always on my mind. And I'm constantly putting it on my to-do list. I'm like, I need to order these supplies, or I need to go pick up this thing, or I need to get started on it. And there's a process that I need to follow. And I don't necessarily want to map it out, but sometimes I do. And I'll say, I'm going to do this thing this day, this thing this other day, instead of maybe taking a step back and go, okay, I can fill this in over a 3-day period, and I could probably knock it out if I just spend 5 hours a day each day doing it. Instead, I'll like sprinkle it into all those different spots. So I think my biggest problem at this point has been that I don't say no enough.
Interesting. And that's, I say no a lot now. And it's interesting because someone was like, you must be really busy. And for years, honestly, I'm like, I'm not busy. I just tell people no most of the time. So, and it's, I mean, you have to look at like what you're trying to do, and we're past middle age now. I don't know, is that a range? But like, you and I were past middle age. So like our time is precious. And I'm like, yeah, if I don't want to spend my time on that thing, like, no, like we don't even need to give a reason. You could just say, no. And I'm like, oh, are you busy? It doesn't matter if I'm busy. I don't want to fucking do that thing you're asking me for. And I have a lot of inbound stuff, like via email, like with the podcast and all that kind of stuff. You will probably find this, Josh, like even if you have a modest sized audience, you're going to start getting like 3 emails a day, like people trying to pitch to be on your show. I would advise you, tell them no. Like they're just trying to like get in front of your audience and steal your time and energy and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, if you say no, then that allows you to like take your priorities that you have for you and your family and like spend time on that. And it doesn't, like, you don't have to justify it to them at all. So
you said something about being, you know, middle-aged, and that's real. Even though I've got the energy that I can go run a 5K, I don't have the energy necessarily to be able to do multiple things in the same day. As funny as that sounds, like I used to be able to just do that. Like I'd work for 8 hours and then I'd go rehab a house for 4 hours. And then I could do that multiple days in a row. And now, like, I can't even, that sounds like such a foreign concept. And I think that, I don't know if that's a result of slowing down a little bit and then not having the energy to do it, or if it's just purely my age.
It's probably both. I mean, the thing is, like, I feel pretty good too. And I could, you know, I can exercise and do other stuff and have energy to do things. But at the same time, having one main thing per day is pretty good. When it stacks up, and this happened a few weeks ago where Elizabeth and I had, it's good stuff. It's social plans. It was like someone's birthday, some other party, some other thing. But we really only wanted to do one thing that day. But we ended up at a breakfast at a birthday party in the afternoon, a nice happy hour at a brewery that we love. And then there was like a evening activity, and all on the same day. And as it slowly unfolded, we were like, oh, this is not what we wanted to do, one thing today. And that was it. But again, all great. We got to socialize and be with our friends. And I like to go to breweries and I like to go to the, you know, parties and stuff like that, but it was a little too much. And everyone's different. Like, that may be perfect for you if you're more outgoing and social and you're like, I do want to be out. And like, that's exactly what you want to spend your time on. But that is a tough thing, because the hardest part is, like, it might be like two or three things that you like and you would want to do, but you just don't want to do them all on the same day. It's really tough. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, it's good advice. It's very good advice. I like the one thing per day rule of thumb.
I may have picked that up from Pete, Mr. Money Mustache. You may have mentioned something in passing like that. And I was like, that's a really good idea. The overall, I rambled on a lot there, but the biggest thing is, like, to leave open space. And a quick example, if people are still kind of shaking their head, they're like, well, I want to be really productive. Some people, we all have to drive or commute to get to a different place. And maybe I'm estimating, it's going to take me, 30 minutes to get to this place. But I'm basing that on the best case scenario of traffic that day, which almost never works out. And you never know what's going to happen, and it may take you longer than you think. And if that happens and you didn't have slack in your schedule, like, you're late. And once you get late for that one thing earlier in the day, it has a cascading effect, and then everything's behind, and then all of a sudden you're rushed. And I have mentioned before, like, I don't want to be in a rush. And when I have, like, time to get somewhere, like, I feel good and I'm not stressed out. And everyone's different. Maybe some people like that stress. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But basically, if you plan your days and weeks and months and, like, you're constantly a little behind because you didn't account for a few of these traffic lights to slow you down, or whatever thing slowed you down, all of a sudden you're, like, late all the time and you're stressed out, at least for me. So, like, having the slack in the schedule, I'm like, oh, it's great. I have no big rush.
I think people like that bit of an adrenaline rush and that sense of feeling busy. Me, I've always been kind of against that. Even though I tend to make myself busy, I don't necessarily love the feeling of that I always have to be on to the next thing or running late to the next thing. There's people that just thrive on that, though. In my corporate career, there was people that were always late to the next meeting because they were just notoriously behind. And I got anxiety for them because they were late.
I did hear, I forgot what it was called. It was something like, essentially, like, bragging about being so busy and stuff like that. And yeah, like, that, I shut that off a long time ago. And I think I did a bad job. Like, when people were late for meetings, or like, I'm on two meetings at the same time, like, two calls, I'm like, you're like getting nothing done in either one. Like, no one gives a fuck if you're acting busy. But anyway, I'm the one that got laid off. I didn't look as busy.
Well, it's like a badge of honor, I think, in some cases where people are like, look at me. But I've never felt that.
All right. So I think we covered all the stuff. Any parting thoughts before you let us know where folks could find you?
No, I think we covered quite a bit there, Doug. It's a good conversation.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. Where can people find you? Where can they check out your podcast?
Yeah. So it's 9to5, the number 9, 2to, and then fi. And we have a website, 9to5pod.com, I believe is what it is, because 9to5 was taken by somebody and we think it's going to be relinquished soon. So we're hoping that we can snag that up. Podcast should be available anywhere you see can find podcasts. And then we have it on YouTube as well. So we've been recording video for the episodes.
All right. Very good. Yeah, we'll link up to all that stuff and people should check out the show. And coming up soon, I think the next episode is going to be with your co-host, Elliot. So looking forward to that. Or it'll be in a couple weeks. I can't remember. Who knows what the schedule will be. All right. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Doug. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do 3 things for us. Number 1, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number 2, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number 3, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week.
Yeah, so you're going to... Oh my gosh, I just drew a blank. I'm sorry, Doug.
We won't edit it out either. This is real podcasting, you know.
You're going to FinCon next week. Is that something that you think would be beneficial to some newbies like me and Elliot?
Yeah, so there's a couple of big aspects of it. One, if you're going to try and learn stuff, there's 3 days of talks where, I mean, people come from all different sort of platforms and creation mediums. Some are huge on YouTube, some are podcasters, some are bloggers. Even still, there were some talks on blogging because a lot of the people that have been going for a while, like blogging is what they did before and they're like transitioning to other mediums. And essentially, you could learn a ton if you want to from, you know, the process or as far as like creation and like the workflow. Some people will talk about monetizing. Some people will talk about growth. Other people will talk about burnout, although that's less common. Less people share stories that don't turn out. But I'll tell you my idea for maybe like next year. So that's one aspect. Yeah, you can learn a ton. And it's about, I think the last couple have been around, I could be off, but say around 1,500 people, probably maybe a little less. I could be off by like several hundred or so, but I know, I think it was around 2,000 in like 2019 before I got into it. So obviously that's like way bigger than, I mean, that's a very large conference and there's, I mean, you can meet hundreds of new people each day. Sure. So that said, the reason why I go is because I get to hang out with my friends. So some people only go to like this event. Some people go to economy. Some people do both, but it is like, you know, it's usually in a nice convention center in a city, easy to get to, but it's also like relatively expensive when you look at the hotel prices versus like, you know, this one's in Portland, Oregon. Cincinnati's a little cheaper during like spring break time in March, right? Where economy is. So anyway, you get to hang out with friends, you get to meet a bunch of people. And it's interesting because, you know, even if you didn't, even if you didn't have the podcast and you weren't active in your local Choose FI community, you could still just like walk up to some of the biggest podcasters and just like start talking to them. So it's a very like, especially in our FI space, like everyone's just like pretty chill. Some of the other like big financial creators, they're not as approachable. Like some people, I mean, I don't have any specific examples, but some people are just like, ah, you know what? I'm fucking awesome. Because it, like, it's big enough where like some speakers will be like a little bit outside of our normal area. Most people are pretty cool. And if you go to a few of them, like you'll know a lot of the folks that, that come around. And just overall, it's a lot of fun. So like, it's worth checking out, especially if you're like, oh, I do want to learn a few things. I want to meet some people. You could actually, like, if you're thinking, oh, I want to start interviewing people, then you can meet a shitload of people. And it's great to have folks from the audience that you interview. But sometimes people, they get a little nervous. They're not great on camera. They're not, they can't communicate as well. But if you get another podcaster or another creator, usually they have their stories down. They've told them many times and it's a little more streamlined, that sort of thing. If you did go, like, cause you mentioned you and Elliot were like, oh, when is it? Is it coming up? And it's actually like next week. So it was a little too soon to pull the trigger, or like you don't have enough time to plan such a thing. But yeah, what would you look to get out of it?
I think we were probably talking about it from both a learning and educational aspect and a networking opportunity. So I was curious if there's that piece of it in there as well, so that you're just like, and how does that work? Are you, do you have shirts and cards and you're kind of trying to hand them out to people to get your name out there, or is there even a networking aspect to it?
Yeah, huge networking. They have systems set up for networking. So I think you can like set up meetings there. They have an app. And people will reach out and say, hey, do you want to try to meet up? I'll buy you coffee because something. And I'm like, I could buy my own coffee, dude. Like, I'm not going to buy your thing. Whatever it is, I don't want it. So, and some are less sales pitchy, you know. But yeah, networking is huge. There are some like formal things. So they have, if you're a speaker or you pay, they have sort of a pro mixer where you go. And essentially, I think you get like one in the last couple of years, you get like a drink ticket. And then it's all about like meeting people and whether you're trying to meet like companies that want to work with creators or creators meeting other creators. It's just a whole big networking event. Usually, I think it's often on the first day or very early on. And it's usually extremely loud. So like, that's the first time that I start losing my voice. And I'm like, I'm just screaming in your ear and you could barely hear me. It depends on the venue and all that stuff too. But typically, you know, you've heard me talk about losing my voice and all that stuff. So
just hearing the number of people sounds overwhelming to me, because I think economy is right around 500 people. And that seems huge to me. And just trying to get out and meet people, and I'm sort of an introvert anyway, and it's hard to really put myself out there with self-promotion and things like that. But exercises like this are helping with that.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, depending on what you're going to, it doesn't feel very much bigger than economy. It's really dependent on the venue though. So some of, there was one, the first one I went to was in Austin. There was one in Orlando, and then there was one in New Orleans, and then Atlanta most recently. But I was going to say the venue makes it feel different. So like some rooms feel like there's lots of open space and people spread out more. Some of them are more concentrated, and then it just always feels like there's a ton of people in there. And it just depends on the specific hotel and the convention center and all that kind of stuff. And one thing I forgot to mention that you asked about is like, do people like go out and try to promote and stuff like that? Some people do. I never really have, other than like me and Carl giving out free t-shirts and stickers and stuff like that. And I've never printed out cards because when I get cards, I'm just like, I'm not going to do anything. Like, you don't even give me the card. Like, if you want to try to track me down, like, do the homework, like, try to look me up or whatever. But I'm coming at it from a different place. But overall, like many things, if you seem needy, if you're like, please take my card and I really want to, like, that's a turnoff overall. So I don't know if it works for me, but I also don't want inbound stuff. So a lot of times people would try to give me stuff and I would take their card, but I'm like, I'm not going to do anything with it unless it was like a really awesome thing. And I want to get in touch with you, but that's few and far between. Or otherwise I would like get their phone number immediately. And then we're hanging out for a couple days at the convention center. So
I'm starting to regret those 10,000 business cards I just had printed out.
And I mean, some people do have cards and like they pass them out and like people get fancier stuff. And if it fits what you're trying to do, which I'm not here trying to tell anyone which approach, but I was just like, you know what? I hate getting cards and I don't want you to get in touch with me most of the time. So I'm like, they're like, do you have a card? I'm like, nope. But if you really need me, like you'll look it up, like go look it up. You can get in touch with me if you do homework. So.